Good afternoon. This is Robert Hertzberg for Network Computing Magazine. This afternoon we have as our guest Matthew Zulik, the chief executive of Red Hat Software. Red Hat is one of the premier companies in the area of commercializing Linux. Matthew, thanks for joining us today.
Robert, thank you. Nice to be with you.
You've gotten a big vote of confidence over the years, Matthew, from financial companies. I think 8 of the 10 biggest global investment banks are your customers. What types of functions are they using Linux for now, and how do you see them expanding that in the future?
Well, you know, the large global banks have historically been ravenous early adopters of technology, and going back to 2000 and 2001, we started to engage the banks as they were looking to reduce the total cost of operations while boosting performance. As you know, for those banks, the transaction is the business. So the higher rate of performance at the lowest possible cost translates into increased profits for the banks. So a lot of that work was rehosting, replatforming existing legacy applications, proprietary applications that were developed internally, things like mortgage-backed security applications, trading systems, retail brokerage applications, and moving those from aging Unix systems over to Red Hat Linux on Intel. Of course, the growing thirst for CPU and cycles with ever more reliable and higher performing systems maps really well to the technical roadmap that Red Hat has been building around areas like virtualization and SOA-based architectures. So, of course, as we develop and make customers more successful through our service paradigm and technical delivery, the appetite continues to grow for greater Intel/AMD-based implementations.
One of the things you're mentioning there is lower costs, but we have had IT managers price out server licenses for Red Hat versus Microsoft. Not talking about Unix here, but Microsoft. And Red Hat comes back every bit as expensive, sometimes a bit more so. Why is this? How is it justified? And where are the savings?
You know, there are certainly technical inaccuracies in that discussion. A simple one as an example, maybe we don't license software, we sell annual subscriptions. So maintenance and service and support, along with the software functionalities included within the purchase price of the subscription, as compared to a software license sold by a competitor plus maintenance, and then potentially the additional cost upgrades for advanced levels of service and support. So that's a basic difference. But I think where customers truly see the value is on the ongoing and the consistent reduction in the total operating cost of their computing environment. So as customers deploy more and more systems, they have had a decreased dependency on human labor to manage them. They've had a decreased amount of service and support required for security implementations because of the high degree of security that Linux and open source implementations can bring. Not to mention the incredible flexibility that businesses like Red Hat or like investment banks can create by creating a flexible open source architecture to meet the needs of as their businesses change or acquisitions and make integration of disparate systems more integratable. I think these are some of the major cost benefits that Linux and open source brings.
You bring up an interesting point there with some of the subtleties of how Red Hat prices its products and some of the deep expertise that the investment banking companies and other potential customers are starting to build up in the area of Linux. We have heard sort of similar complaints on the pricing and cost side from Red Hat Enterprise Linux customers who have to pay tech support fees even if they're not using the tech support. And I guess what I'm asking is why Red Hat doesn't offer a per-call support option for shops that have deep Linux expertise that don't feel like they need the blanket support contracts.
That's a good question, Robert. A couple of things I would bring to your attention. When a customer purchases a subscription for Red Hat, it's just not the 1-800 break and fix that they're receiving. That was an old business of Red Hat back in 1998. Part of what we are marketing and selling to the customer is a high degree of integration of the software technology with the service paradigm, where we have a basic level of service, of course, which is 8x5. But in addition to the support, the customer is receiving a steady stream of certified technologies that we have been able to put through our certification and testing processes to ensure that they have application-level compatibility, that they have drivers, support for the latest iteration of hardware and software technologies, and most importantly, that there's a single point of global contact for that technology to run and operate within an ever-changing computing infrastructure environment. The risk is, of course, if you price on a per incident, which works really well for the consumer space, but for the enterprise space, you really then begin to potentially ask yourself, you want to put out technology that may not be at the highest degree of quality that could potentially really inflate the number of per incident calls and ultimately leave the customer in a very dissatisfied state. My perspective on this is simply that the operating system, when you compare it to the total procurement price of a computing system, hardware, software, and operating system support, the operating system and its related support is a very small fraction of the total cost of procurement.
You're making a good case for why a customer should have support along with the purchase of the overall operating system, but I'm wondering whether support and service and training and those businesses are good businesses for Red Hat. And you know, I just was looking at some of your numbers before we started to speak. Your subscriptions grew by 53% in your most recent fiscal year on a year-over-year basis. That business had gross margins of 90%. By contrast, the training and services piece of your business grew 6% and had gross margins under 50%. Is there a different way that you can provide that service? Is there a more cost-effective way? Have you thought about doing it through a third party?
Well, you're exactly right. I'm pleased that you noticed that because we have invested substantially over the last almost 10 years now to build out the automation that would allow us to continue to be able to build an inventory of repeatable cases so that we can solve customer problems more rapidly in an automated fashion. The technology and the enhancements are delivered through Red Hat Network directly to the customer. So, you know, perhaps 5 years ago, it was put in a box kit that only exists in a small subset. Just the amount of different ways that we can continue to be the lowest cost, highest value provider is really an internal mantra that we have here. When you have a labor-intensive business, like some forms of training and some forms of professional services, you appropriately highlight it is a lower performing from a margin standpoint business. And we think that from a professional services standpoint, there are better companies out there that will do that, whether they be Accenture or IBM Global Services, Hewlett Packard. There are companies where that is core to their strategy. We have a distance learning project going on. We do provide training and education to enterprise customers through online distance learning. But for some reason, the take-up for that seems to be greater in classroom settings.
So do you anticipate ever being completely out of the third-party support business and letting the Accentures and the IBMs of the world do the support on Linux systems that came through you?
You mean professional services?
Yes.
I think we will always be in the direct service of Red Hat product and technologies. I think what you're beginning to see is that more and more customers are asking Red Hat to take responsibility for other technologies outside the operating system that are also open source. So you should anticipate Red Hat using its infrastructure and global service and support competencies to expand the library of technologies that we can service and support.
This March, Matthew, you were reported to have had dinner with Microsoft's Steve Ballmer at a New York restaurant. What did you guys talk about?
I read that article, too.
But you have much more insight than the writer who wrote it, I'm sure.
Well, I wasn't, you know, I only read the article, and it has been a source of great conjecture. So I don't know what the writer is referring to.
You did not meet with him?
But, you know, to the question, I think Red Hat and Microsoft have engaged each other numerous times in the last 12 months, largely being initiated by customers. And I think the good news about that is the growing legitimacy of open source software inside of the enterprise computing market. And certainly a challenge that both companies face is ensuring interoperability as both of us now continue to operate within the corporate IT environment. So I think it's only natural that smart, technically driven companies look to try to find ways to collaborate and point fingers. So you can read into that. That's where the basis of any of our discussions with Microsoft have come from.
Well, I mean, you know, there has been finger pointing in the past, and it's, I think it's happened on both sides. Maybe it's fair to say on all sides around Microsoft. I know that Steve Ballmer called Linux a cancer and a destroyer of intellectual property 4 or 5 years ago. And I think the same year you told the Senate Judiciary Committee that Microsoft was a monopolist and they had seriously warped the technology industry. Those are, I think, direct quotes. So I guess my question is whether, from your perspective, you see Microsoft as being in the process of changing its ways.
My comment was about their business practices. He was talking about the health of open source software. From their business practices standpoint, you know, they continue to be a very aggressive company. I think that if we have noticed a change, of course, the fact that Linux and open source has a footprint in the enterprise computing market that is driving dialogue. And I think that's been great news for the customer, that the customer has choice. Insofar as his comments about Linux and Red Hat and open source software, he'll have to speak to you on what he meant by those.
Novell is pushing hard with its SUSE distribution. For instance, Lenovo is going to preload SUSE on the ThinkPad T60P, I believe it is. How much of a threat to Red Hat is Novell?
I view all of our competitors as threatening. We are living in a world right now where, in an open source world, where there are very low barriers to entry, and that you're competing in a very challenging technical environment right now every single day for customers. So I think we take them all, Sun Microsystems, Microsoft, Novell, we take all of these firms as highly competitive.
What's Red Hat's roadmap for virtualization and Xen?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. The teams in the Fedora community have been working really, really hard on that for now almost a couple of years. We're excited about the great potential benefit to the customer in and around virtualization. But I think that we feel very strongly that Xen and the virtualization engine is only a component of the solution. Customers are going to have to change work processes. They're going to have to deal with the areas regarding security and authentication, identity management. They're going to need the tools and the management infrastructure to successfully implement the potential benefits of virtualization across their computing paradigm to really leverage the growing capacity of compute cycles. We don't think that that's a product-driven solution. We think that it will increasingly create challenge and opportunity for both tools for core virtualization platform and management services to deliver the full benefits to the customer. So the good news is that Fedora Core 5 and upcoming Fedora Core 6 in September will give customers a great preview of the product component, and we are working really hard to educate all of our global strategic accounts on both the product, technical roadmap, and services strategies to help our customers migrate to RHEL 5 and virtualization and beyond.
How will GPL3 affect Red Hat and Red Hat Enterprise Linux?
You know, I think that there's been a lot of debate publicly regarding GPL3. I think we have continued to defer to Evan Moglund and Free Software and EFF Foundations, respectively, because I think that there is so much uncertainty and so much public debate about that. I think we're going to take a wait and see and to see how this unfolds.
What are the sources of the uncertainty? Where do you see this possibly coming out?
Well, certainly an area of debate has been in and around, one area of debate has been in and around digital rights management. And so I think we are stepping back and observing right now and hopefully becoming a good attentive listener. That's not only an issue for GPLv3, of course, but for the industry at large.
Every public company goes through change as it matures, and you're bound to go through some as a result of your $350 million acquisition of the open source middleware maker, JBoss. What are the pitfalls you need to guard against there?
Certainly for a fast-growing, young, successful company like JBoss, you know, they as a private entity had certain modes of doing business as compared to Red Hat. They had customer expectations maybe slightly different. And just the scaling issue of how do you now enable their technology to meet the needs of a global customer set that Red Hat has. Channels as distribution. There is certainly a growing sense of accountability that we all are responsible for not only making Red Hat and JBoss success, but making sure that open source software within the enterprise computing market continues to have an outstanding reputation for service reliability and technology that performs within the customer environment. So I think we want to make sure we create a culture that continues to be focused on performance, continue to advance the communication and the dialogue that has allowed us to build technologies transparently and openly, continue to work and build out communities of use where the leverage of the GPL and related open source licenses can really build the visibility and the collaboration within a global open source community. And I think most importantly, allow the JBoss people to build on the success that made them be successful enterprise that Red Hat wanted to acquire.
Red Hat has benefited from the goodwill associated with Linux and Linus Torvalds, who has become a sort of hero to programmers because of his open source ideals. and the sort of single-minded focus that he has on software quality. How important is the continued goodwill of the Linux community to Red Hat's success? I guess what I'm wondering about is, as a public company CEO, does there come the point where people stop seeing you as the anti-Microsoft and start seeing you as the builder of yet another evil empire?
Well, that's a good question. I think that the entire society at large owes Linus Torvalds a lot of thanks, not only for his technical contributions, but I just think his points of view of how issues can be improved through an open and transparent process. I think, secondly, regarding Red Hat, in the almost 10 years that I have been doing this, part of, our brand has attempted to reinforce our public support through our actions regarding the open sourcing and ultimately using the GPL license, of which we contribute technology back to the open source community, our business practice around keeping and working within the community and upstream maintainers. That has been a guiding philosophy that has brought the company this far. Of course, as you get larger, you have a balance sheet, you generate the kind of productivity that you announced earlier, communicated earlier. There will be those that will see Red Hat as a competitor, and there will be those that will immediately jump to claims that we could be the next Microsoft. I will tell you that for people who have come to Red Hat and met our people, both CEOs of early stage open source companies, investors of open source companies, I think certainly see two strong qualities that I believe we try to reinforce every day. And those qualities are a very deep sense of commitment to our customers and our customers' success. And then secondly, a very deep sense of contribution and commitment to the open source model. As the technology use expands and grows, the open source community grows. And now there is no longer just one open source community. There are likely to be hundreds of open source communities, each with different needs and different behaviors and different leaderships. So it is challenging, but at the heart of it has been our almost 17-year commitment to being a pure play, a pure open source provider of technology and services.
Well, I know a lot of people will be watching closely to see how you do. And Matthew Zulick, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. This is Robert Hertzberg with Network Computing. Matthew, thanks very much.
Thanks, Robert.